Here's our Jays analyst, Steve Phillips. Steve, obviously, you're coming at it from a different view. You're an American guy, but I'm sure you're aware of Votto's comments. This caused a bit of a controversy up here. Have you ever had a situation with the Mets where a guy caused a stir in his hometown or home country, and you felt like, uh-oh, this was going to maybe weigh on him, and you had to deal with it somehow as the GM?
Well, you know, I'm well aware of his comments. And you know, the one situation we had was back in the strike in 1994, right, in the 1995. We had players who, you know, decided that they would sign up to be replacement players, and all of them did it for some reasons or another. I know as part of the Mets organization back then, we kind of manipulated our prospects to try to get them to be willing to participate as a replacement player. Now, you know, the major league players looked at them as scabs, trying to break the union, and we tried to portray it a little bit differently. But it was back then that John Franco made statements like, "We'll show them the Bronx, right? We'll show them the Bronx. We'll show them what New York's like for these guys who are breaking the picket line." So, you know, I've had that sort of thing, but not necessarily talking against their city. But, you know, I look at Joey Votto, he's a different guy. Like all along, I've always thought, man, he's just different. And forever, he stayed quiet. He kept to himself. He didn't speak up. And then over about the last year or so, he started to come out of his shell. We saw him interacting with fans differently. We saw him kind of, you know, he bought the donkey for his teammate, Zach Cozart. You know, when he said if he made the All-Star team, he'd get him a donkey, and he got him one. And so he started doing sort of these sort of quirky, kind of unique personality, little different things. And I thought, well, he's starting to come out of his shell. He kind of kicked the shell off with this last thing. And, you know, he's just different. And I think that sometimes, because he's been so quiet, he doesn't have a lot of experience about how people are going to react to what he says. And so I think he went out there a little too far, a bit like a bull in a china shop, and then had to try to pick up all the broken glass afterwards.
Yeah, I think there's no question about that. He is a bit of a different cat, and I don't think he's overly comfortable with the media, but you're right, he's been doing more and more media. Like, he won a big award up here in December, and he came on our show that day, and it was a really engaging interview, but he had some really interesting things to say, and that was not the case in years past. We had been requesting him for the longest time, and it was always, no thank you, not interested, not doing it. Now, because of the blowback, I would expect he probably goes back into the shell. Like, I would think he'll be shell-shocked from this, and I'm not sure he's going to do media anymore because, like, this was all on a Yahoo podcast. Like, I'd never even heard of this podcast before, and it's everywhere. So
yeah,
I'm not sure how he's going to react.
That, you know, typically, my experience is when a guy ends up getting himself in trouble, he's like, "I'm not going to answer any questions anymore," and they go back into their shell, right? They turtle. They go right back into their shell. He goes and plays first base. I mean, he took some shots at Cincinnati too. For a guy who has said, I know we're going to rebuild. I'm fine being here. I don't want to get traded. I don't want to waive my no trade clause. I don't want to go anywhere else." You really don't get to complain then when things don't go that way. You've chosen to stay there. And you knew what the potential consequences could have been. So he was kind of, I think he just, the stars and the moon aligned in a certain way that he just kind of let it go and he puked it all out. And then afterwards thought, oh boy, what do I do to clean this mess up?
Yeah, no question. With Steve Phillips. So the Jays got a big win in New York against the Mets. They got blown out last night, but the biggest story, I think, today is Jay Happ actually supplied them with some starting pitching. He went seven innings, only gave up two hits, 10 strikeouts. His ERA isn't great, but he's been fairly consistent throughout the year. But this starting staff has been awful. I think it's the 29th-ranked staff in Major League Baseball. Only the White Sox have a worse ERA collectively. We know what's up with Stroman. He's on the DL. What are they going to do here? How can they turn this around? You just wait for it to happen organically, or could you see them making some moves?
Yeah, I don't see any moves. I think that you know, I've always looked at it this way, that you know, I can make a trade to improve my team, but unless my good players play well, I'm not going to win. So I can go get a guy, but that's not going to change the fact that if my good players don't play well, we're not going to win. If our good pitchers don't pitch well, I can add another reliever, I can add another starter, but that's not really the answer. I need the other four guys or other five guys to be able to deliver. And so, you're right, it was a good news for Happ today. Happ actually swung the bat pretty well today, too, with 2-for-3 in the game, scored a couple runs. But I think in the end it comes down to the pitching has to get right. Stroman has to figure it out. Stroman is on the DL. I know they call it fatigue shoulder. He's got a mechanical flaw, and I kind of broke this down. I sent out some pictures on Twitter at Steve Phillips GM. He's doing this year what he did in the beginning of the 2016 season, where he had some struggles early, and I looked at it and then saw an adjustment he made when he started to get locked in at the end of 2016, and he carried that all the way through 2017, and now he's doing it again, this flaw. And what it is that when his leg kick, when his knee comes up over the rubber, so you know he starts to turn his body and his knee goes up, and this is particularly from the stretch, when his knee goes up, his hands are going up. His hand in his glove is going up. And what should be happening is when his knee goes up, his hand should be coming down out of his glove to start his delivery. And because he's taking his hands up, he doesn't give himself enough time for the hand to come down around and get on top of his slider and his sinker. And therefore, pitches are elevated. He doesn't have the command and the release point. And so, the video is really clear. I sent out some pictures on it, and you can see it. And I'll be surprised if after this 10 days, he doesn't come back with that being fixed, that his hands will no longer go up. And it was clear the adjustment he made in 16. It's clear what he did all last year in 2017, and it's clear what he's doing wrong right now.
Well, the pitching
now, the question is this. Is he doing it because it's just a mechanical flaw, or is he doing it because his arm is hurt or tired or just doesn't have that life to it, and he's trying to generate more energy? I don't know what the cause and effect is, but I know what the symptom is right now that's causing the poor mechanics.
That's where I was heading. Well, the pitching coach obviously picked up on something like that, and they'll try and fix it in this little DL stint.
Yeah, I think this is. I think this is a lot like the Cubs putting Yu Darvish on the DL with the flu. You don't put a guy on the DL for 10 days for the flu, but it allowed them to kind of figure out his mechanics, get him back on track. Is he tipping his pitches? And I think it's the same sort of thing, that it's a reasonable sell to a doctor that he had fatigue or he had inflammation in spring training, that he's not been quite right. Something's not going right. So let's hit the pause button, miss two starts, lock him back in again. I think he'll be back after his 10 days, and I think he's going to be back with repaired mechanics as much as anything.
Everyone's got a Vladdy Guerrero Jr. take. Guy's sitting over 400. He can't stay in Double A, but what are they going to do? Move him up to Triple A? Why would his numbers really drop that much in Triple A? Like what are they going to do here with him, Steve?
Yeah, I think what they're doing is they're going to tap their foot. They're going to look at their watch. They're going to tap their foot, look at their watch, and just hope the calendar gets through until next year. He's tearing it up. There's no question about that. And I've always said this. Players tell you when they're ready for the next level. And certainly guys can jump from Double A to the major leagues, but it's not as simple as that, right? You don't make these decisions in a vacuum. The ultimate question, I wrote about this last week on .ca, is what is the best use of Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s service time? Is in his time as a member of the Blue Jays, what is the best usage of that period of time for the organization? And I think the question is this. Is it better for him to help them try to compete for the second wild card spot this year while probably having to learn and play a different position because Donaldson's going to play third, so they're going to have to try to pound a square peg in a round hole, putting Vlad Guerrero maybe in left field, and try to get to the second wild card spot this year, or do they have a better chance of saving the service time now, tacking it on the back end of his time that they control him for 6 years before free agency, and say that in 2024, that's when he's 25 years old, he's going to be his best. They're going to be playing with better players around him and maybe rebuilding the franchise and have a chance where the Yankees and Red Sox have fallen back a bit, and maybe the Jays can win a division, they can go on and win a World Series. What's the best usage of his time? For me, it's to wait. That you can move him to AAA at some point, let him get that experience. I wouldn't call him up at all this year, and I wouldn't call him up until mid-April next year so that he doesn't become a free agent until after the 2025 season instead of after the 2024 season.
Thank you, Steve. Always appreciate it.
You got it, guys. Thanks for having me.
Here's Steve Phillips. So Steve says, buy your time. Take it easy.
That would be...
Let him, you know...
Let him marinate, but... He's thinking like a GM, mm-hmm. not a fan, and the fans want him up. But
Well, they have to do whatever they think is best for him and the team and the long-term ramifications on bringing him up, et cetera. I understand that. It's obviously way more complicated and deeply layered than, hey, he's really good. I want to see him. And I got tickets for the game this weekend. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's 19.
Yeah, he's going to be here for a long time. But we haven't had a prospect like this in a long time with the Jays. Yeah. And really, the last one we had in the city was Matthews, and Matthews came up right away. He got drafted, and he walked into the league.
Yep.
Like, this guy's even more hyped than Marner was, or Nylander was, or Riley was. I mean, he's the number one prospect in baseball, and he's putting up historic numbers in AA. So people are aware of it. He's got a name that rings out. Everybody knows the Vladdy Guerrero name.
Well,
we'll see.